94 WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A new report from UVA says campus police failed to enforce fire bans on university grounds during a torchlit white supremacist rally last month. Harrisonburg's Cesar Lara Rios gets more time to make his case to stay in the U.S. And Hidden Figures author Margot Lee Shetterly weighs in on the question of race and monuments in Charlottesville and elsewhere. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, September 12th.
Support for the WMRA Daily comes from Blue Ridge Community College. When you earn a two-year associate degree, transferring to a four-year college is possible through their guaranteed transfer agreement programs. More information at brcc.edu.
A report from the University of Virginia says campus police responding to a torchlit march of white supremacists on school grounds relied on incomplete intelligence and failed to enforce fire bans. Those findings were, among others, laid out in a report issued Monday by a group of deans and others. The group is studying UVA's response to the white nationalist rallies that roiled Charlottesville last month. Monday's report focuses only on the campus march the night of August 11th, not on the rally that happened the following day. On that night, hundreds of white men carrying tiki torches shouted racial slurs and confronted counter-demonstrators. The report says police were not aware that they could enforce university limits on open burns or a state law prohibiting burns with the intent to intimidate. It also says police were overly reliant on intelligence from other agencies. Also, in May, Harrisonburg's Cesar Lara Rios was detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, and appeared to be set for deportation to Mexico. But last weekend, he got more time to make his case to stay, as WMRA's Christopher Clymer-Kurtz reports.
More than 3 months after filing a motion with the Board of Immigration Appeals, or BIA, Herndon-based immigration attorney Zarana Robinson learned Saturday that the BIA has decided to reopen Lara Rios' case.
There's no threat of removal at this point. It's just a matter of time before he's out.
Whether or not Lara Rios will face a bond hearing before walking free, Robinson anticipates now having 2 or 3 years to substantiate his case for asylum based on fears for his safety should he return to Mexico, where he says several family members have been murdered. Another option remains in play, too, as his mother, a legal resident with medical concerns and who relies on his support, has filed a petition on his behalf that would make him eligible for an unlawful presence waiver from U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. Robinson said the drawn-out detention had Lara Rios and his family on the brink of withdrawing the motion to the BIA and accepting his deportation. However, Robinson instead filed a motion to expedite the decision, which was dated September 7 and arrived at her office on Saturday.
He hung in there for, another 2-3 weeks, and it was good because it was a positive decision by the board.
Robinson said that in her 10 years of practice, she has never before been granted such a motion. For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
After the violent white supremacist rally in Charlottesville last month, many people in the Shenandoah Valley, an area rich in Civil War history, are asking, what now? WMRA's Jesse Nadler takes a look at unfolding discussions about race across the region.
Now is a good time for communities to talk about how they talk about race. Dr. Warney Reed runs the Race and Social Policy Research Center at Virginia Tech. In the first of 3 presentations beginning in Lexington Wednesday night, he'll make the case that more effective discussion ensues when people focus less on individual prejudices and biases and more on institutional policies and practices, which he says inculcates separation.
If we focus on the policies and practices, then we can all get together and decide whether or not those policies and practices should exist or whether they should be challenged and changed. And the only way they will be changed is to have individual citizens force that change.
He's prepared to answer questions about the events in Charlottesville following the discussion. It takes place at Lilburn Downing Middle School on September 13th. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
Last week, President Donald Trump indicated a willingness to work with Democrats to cut a deal on raising the debt ceiling and funding disaster relief. Well, that's given some new hope to Democrats who want the president to sign a bill that would give the so-called Dreamers a reprieve from deportation, which they now face because Trump rescinded the Obama-era DACA program. Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia hopes that will happen.
If we get a bill to the White House, I think they'll sign it. So the issue is, can we find bipartisan accord in Congress on this? And what we need is Republican co-sponsors. We have a few in the Senate, not yet enough, but that's going to be the path going forward, is trying to find Republicans willing to join with the unified Democratic representation in supporting a fix.
That report was from Virginia Public Radio. If you've been watching TV, you've probably noticed it's election season. This fall, candidates for governor have been flooding the airwaves with commercials. But as Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports, one candidate is spending more than the other.
Republican Ed Gillespie is hard to escape, especially if you're watching college football or the local news or just about anything, really. A Virginia Public Access Project compilation of spending reports in the four largest media markets in Virginia shows Gillespie spending almost twice as much as Democrat Ralph Northam. Quentin Kidd of Christopher Newport University says Northam probably would be spending more if he didn't get bogged down in that expensive primary fight with Tom Perriello.
The disparity between the two campaigns right now, as we look at these numbers, is really driven by the cost of the primary that Northam ran versus the cost of the primary that Gillespie ran. I suspect by the end of this, we're going to see both of them spend an equal amount of money on TV.
And that's not going to be cheap. The Washington, D.C. media market, which includes Northern Virginia, is one of the most expensive in the country. And as Bob Denton at Virginia Tech points out, it's also where Gillespie is spending the most money.
He's really hitting Northern Virginia, where he needs to do well in the suburbs. And if he can take just another 1% to 2%, as we're looking right now, a 3% to 5% race, it may very well pay off, especially in terms of independence.
These TV ads that campaigns buy are only part of the story. Outside groups are also buying television time, and campaigns are increasingly spending a lot of money buying ads on social media, an attempt to reach out to millennial voters who don't watch much television. I'm Michael Pope.
Margot Lee Shetterly is the author of the New York Times bestseller Hidden Figures, and there, of course, was a big movie based on that. It's about the true story of a group of black female mathematicians working at NASA and helping America dominate aeronautics, space research, and computer technology. Although no textbook acknowledges their work, she discussed her novel yesterday at the Paramount Theater as part of UVA's engagement lecture series. WMRA's Marguerite Gallerini was there and talked with her.
Writing this book was a matter of broadening the American story to include all of its actors, according to Margot Lee Shetterly, author of the book Hidden Figures.
We have had, for a long time, a very narrow idea of American history, and I think this expands that. So I really hope that what this does is encourage people to look beyond the current boundaries for American history.
She presented her book at the Paramount Theater, followed by a book signing and a screening of the movie based on her book, nominated three times at the Academy Awards. During her lecture, she mentioned the absence of black voices in Charlottesville's own history.
I believe one of the reasons why the push to remove these statues is so strong right now is because the statues symbolize an absence. The absence of tales of not just black lives, but American lives. Like the residents of the Black Vinegar Hill neighborhood here in Charlottesville where the statues were built. That absence has created a powerful vacuum, and that vacuum is trying urgently to absorb the stories of people like Dorothy Vaughan and like Mary Jackson, like Katherine Johnson and Christine Darden.
These are the black women of her book who worked at the NASA Research Center in Hampton, Virginia, helping with the space race. Shetterly now lives in Charlottesville, but she is a native of Hampton. And even there, people had never heard of these ladies' scientific contribution.
All the time on the streets of Hampton, Virginia, I run into people who live down the street from Dorothy Vaughan, or they went to church with Katherine Johnson. And though those people knew the women, they too are asking me, why didn't I know this story? One of the obvious reasons is that the black women were literally hidden away in a separate office from the white women. The women, regardless of their race, were given a lower classification. They were paid less than the male engineers, and that's even if they were doing the same work. That meant that the women's contributions were barely acknowledged, much less celebrated.
Before learning about all this, she says she had been living too close to it to fully appreciate the historical significance of the work of these women mathematicians.
So growing up there, I had the very good fortune to see black or female mathematicians, scientists, engineers, as totally normal people. They were as normal as the white male mathematicians and scientists and engineers.
That's a point that Professor Lisa Woolfork from UVA's Department of English underlined during the Q&A session.
What you've done in the story so powerfully is to, as you said, that for you growing up, normal was black, female, scientist, and have them not be three different people. That one person, your Sunday school teacher, for example, or your mother's sorority sister, these were women that did this all the time, and this was normal for you. And I just find that that is such an important new default setting And it allows us to think about the larger picture of America as something that is not limited to very small segments of the population. And now here we are at this wonderful place, this wonderful time in our history, where we get a chance to look back at that history squarely and figure out where we've been and what we want to do differently.
Shetterly agrees.
You know, what happened here in Charlottesville a month ago has a lot to do with what's happening in the country now, but it also has to do with the history. I think we cannot run away from the history, that we really have to face it. And if we do that, then it gives us a much greater chance of achieving those goals that are written into our Constitution and our founding documents. So I think that as painful as it is, perhaps it's an opportunity to address some of those dormant conversations.
For WMRA News, I am Marguerite Gallerini.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for joining me. Enjoy your Tuesday.